This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 37, Sticky Games.
Hello, and welcome to yet another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I'm looking out over a snowy hill where cars are trying to get up here in Budapest. And I'm thrilled to be joined again by my lovely and talented co-host, Michael Rowe.
Why, thank you.
and my other lovely and talented co-host, Phaedra Boynodiris, of course.
It's snowing in Budapest, huh? Did you take your sled out, go down the hill?
I hope my kids did today. I've been up here in the office, so I don't know if they did. They were outside, so
I
did
snow
see
some
that.
Over here overnight. I woke up this morning, and there was actually little snow stuff on the stuffy stuff on the ground.
3-hour delay, right?
I don't know. Well. There was a no-hour delay to get from my bed to my desk.
You didn't have to shovel? Wow.
No. Only during the last call was I shoveling. And boy, was I shoveling.
Well, we have got a show to continue from last week, and we've got some other great things to do, too. And I'm only going to be with you guys for a little while before I have to drop out and do a different call.
That makes me sad. Duh-duh. And I remember where the duh-duh is from. So there's this really, really bad Saturday Night Live skit that they've done the last couple of years with the students at this one college who are really into Japanese animation.
So
they pretend they speak Japanese and they end everything with duh-duh. And I'm like, well, that has nothing to do with anything duh-duh. But it's really, really bad and sad, but funny. So I'll put that in the show notes.
Okay. Well, at least now we know where the reference duh-duh comes from.
The reference duh-duh.
Because I had no idea about that.
Yes.
All right. Well, it looks to me like Phaedra may have dropped out for just a moment again. But
yes,
we
and
shall
we'll
keep
connect
on
her
trucking.
Back into the show. Duh-duh.
All right. So maybe not before. Let's jump straight back into the discussion that we were on from before, which was last week we were talking about the stickiness of games and the notion of using the games and the game structure. We were talking about some sales usage of games and games with mapping and the like too.
Right, right. And the idea was the stickiness factor and the implications on productivity in general, as well, and in that regard, we were talking about kind of the reward mechanism and are you rewarding the right behavior, and does that right behavior drive the productivity, learning, measurements, metrics, everything else that you wanted out of the game. But we were also talking about, you know, some really innovative ideas around, as you said, around like sales modeling of a network neighborhood or a sales modeling of a neighborhood to get understanding of the characteristics of that neighborhood and if there was a stickiness factor there too.
Right, right. And given the concepts of big data, you know, to throw in yet another buzzword bingo term, ding.
Ding da-da.
Ding. No, I'm not doing the da-das. I didn't even watch that sketch.
Oh, it's really bad, but it's funny.
It sounds like it's horrible.
It's actually really funny because it shows when people really don't get it.
Yes.
Right? And the whole thing is, these kids don't get it at all.
Just like me, apparently, for the time being. So where I was heading with the big data concept was there's so much unstructured data and there's so much uncertainty about the data that you can be collecting that it would lend itself to this sort of game metaphor, game environment, to help the salespeople, to help the folks that are out and about make more sense of their environment, make more sense of the opportunities that are right there, right around them. So instead of stopping for that extra coffee in the afternoon, the system could say, hey, I know that you're close enough by to this customer who just bought such and such, which means that they are probably pretty likely to buy something else. And maybe with the weather conditions or maybe with the traffic patterns or maybe a few other things, these are all factors that make them more likely to buy. This is a perfect time to go talk to them. It'll help you make your quota.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So that's where I am really excited about the level of stickiness here and the way that big and unstructured data and the interrelatedness of the Internet of Things and the sensors that can be out there can help make it easier to accomplish your overarching goals by having the system be your virtual assistant and point you in the right direction. I was really struggling with how do you articulate that for a while, but I think I finally kind of narrowed in on it, and it makes more sense to me.
Cool. So I guess the question that comes to my mind, yes, what you describe is good.
It's right? Really good. Yes.
But the question is the how. How do you make the stickiness?
There's been a number of conversations about what makes something really sticky. And my concern is that I don't think people are reading the entire list. They just sort of stop at like the first two and then say, okay, we know the answer. We're good to go.
It's badges, right? That's what makes sticky.
It's badges. Exactly.
Points.
I know. And I think we had a previous show where we talked about the cliff of disillusionment that would most likely be coming. And that's really the fodder for the battleground between the serious games aficionados and otherwise, you know, and the gamification guru. So I don't know. Like, there's this great chart that came out from Bunchbowl and Harvard that gave a list of game-based methodologies. Did you guys already talk about that while I was away?
No.
No.
By the way, that was good. Rachel like from Card Member Services calling me.
Oh, really?
I swear I get that spam call once or twice a week.
Oh, and they waited just on the show.
I know. Thank God for the mute button.
Hi, Rachel. So tell us about the visualization here.
Yeah, so there was this great chart that came out. If you Google Bunchbowl Harvard gamification,
or
you
just
can
use
see
the link that we're going to have in the show notes.
There you go. Use the link. There's a great chart that shows how is it that different kinds of levers used by game designers can, in essence, focus or target on common human desires. And so, for example, like, you know, the common desire for wanting to be for wanting to level up, for wanting to progress or evolve, or altruism, or being able to show your reputation amongst your peers. So it's a very good chart that I think, you know, tries to touch upon what is it that can be leveraged in not just services, but also potentially software within the realm of business. Like, what is it about games that we can borrow in business to give a really sticky experience, not just in terms of what we sell, but also how we interact with people? So I think that's a really hot topic.
Yeah, I think it makes sense, but you know, to kind of play devil's advocate, but what's the magic button? I mean, do I pull lever 3 and level 2 and I'm good?
You know what? I think it totally depends on what you're trying to do. And I think that's the mistake that a lot of people make is, you know, there is no magic algorithm for this, except for getting a really good sense as to what is it you're trying to do with this approach. If there's some way that you can measure the stickiness factor, you can sort of pull on different levers and see, okay, is this working? Is that working? And maybe it even changes over time so that people.
Arg!
And there she goes.
Okay, we're still having technical difficulties with Phaedrus.
Let's go down to the lobby.
Let's go out to the lobby and get ourselves some popcorn.
Yes.
So and you know, the point that she made is absolutely right. You know, we get these people that are looking for that fast ROI specific, you know, one checkbox that they can do, and suddenly they're going to have a magic experience of stickiness in their gamification of some kind of process, right? And you know, it's the typical consulting answer, but sometimes the typical consulting answer is correct, and that is, it depends, right?
Well, and you need to pay someone to tell you it depends? Yeah, of course.
Well, of course. Look, I mean,
we are in an attention economy. We are in an attention economy. So if you're in an attention economy.
Attention!
Not that kind of attention, but you need to find a way to hold that attention for long enough to get something to happen that wouldn't have happened otherwise. So considering this attention economy structure, you have to do things that's going to capture the limited time and attention of the people who you want to do something different than they would have ordinarily or otherwise done. So the Pixel people, which apparently you've now started playing because we talked about it last week.
Yes, you evil, evil man.
I'm terribly sorry for that because it is kind of fun, you know.
It is kind of fun. That's the sad thing.
It's giving the right level of the chemical and, you know, dopamine kind of injection of beep, beep, beep that says, hey, you know, you did something well. Here's a little bit more. You did something else well. Oh, here's a surprise. Oh, you did something else well. Here's a little something that you weren't expecting, or maybe you were. It's kind of cool. And it's enough of that that's coming at the right intervals and in the right way that continues your attention and continues your focus on the play. And so what if you were able to take business processes and do exactly that kind of thing with it?
Yes, that would be awesome.
So you really have to think about what business processes lend themselves to that, right? So a business process, for example, of securing more orders definitely seems to fit. A business process of moving more inventory and getting it out the door and shipping it would seem to fit.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. There's an interesting parallel here that I've been noodling around when we talk about these business processes and we talk about the gaming aspect. And then, you know, early on, 6 months or more ago, we talked about, the Ender's Game concept, right? Mm-hmm. And you start thinking about the connection of machine-to-machine interfaces in a supply chain to gamification of a process and the ability to drive real business change. In a game, one of the key things that you get is the feedback from the environment, or the feedback, and it's fast, it's quick, and it's relevant to the activities that you're doing right now. Hence that little dopamine drip that you're getting. And when you start thinking about a supply chain example or a sales example where you have all this different data that can be captured and collected in that big data thought that you had earlier, Michael, and you provide that in such a way that it is providing instantaneous feedback to the process that you're working, I can see some really powerful and interesting mashups here.
I would tend to agree. So, Phaedra, go ahead and finish the thought before we lose you again. When we lost you.
Sorry, guys. Sorry. So what I was saying was I've been thinking about Fable and Jedi Knights of the Republic. And in those games, as you're playing them, based on how you're playing, your character actually changes. Not just in terms of its visual representation, but also in terms of its skill sets. And I was just thinking, I mean, this is a great example of how something that is really sticky about games, the fact that it's tailoring the experience to you and how you play. And that is just a perfect example of a lesson learned that we could bring into the realm of software, for example. I mean, why is it that we couldn't take that same approach based on how you use a particular kind of software? It actually tailors the entire UI to your needs and what you want.
Well, you know, that kind of – I love that idea, Phaedra. And actually, I wrote a paper about, 3-4 years ago on the gamification, if you want to call it that, or what I called virtual co-location of development teams. And when I think about that, and I think about this tailoring real-time responsiveness of an environment, and then I think of yesterday's PS4 announcement, I come to the realization that we're starting to get a lot of technology in place that'll actually allow us to do this. And the reason I pick on the PS4 announcement is not because, you know, they're doing cool things like getting to a more open standard technology platform with their AMD chips and kind of the x86 architecture. But the magic button on the gamepad, the share button, that's the one that really excites me from a conceptual perspective, in the fact that now one of the things that you and I do and Michael does, and he'll join us back hopefully later. He had to drop off now. one of the things that we all do on a day-to-day basis is we do conference calls, and we have to do a screen share of some sort to provide a presentation to a customer or to a member of our team or our organization, right?
Yep.
And the share and one of the reasons we do this is multi-purpose. One is for communication, and one is for feedback. And so the share button that the PS4 has announced is actually taking that same concept that we in business have been doing for years and years and years and providing it into a gaming environment. So I can be in, my favorite game of the day, whatever it happens to be. Maybe it's the Jedi Knights of the Old Republic or Star Wars The Old Republic or WoW or whatever. None of those games, I think, are on consoles, but let's pretend they were. And I can hit a button and I can start sharing and communicating the way that I do a specific raid or the way I'm building a specific craft in a craft station. Or I could broadcast this in real time to you and say, hey, Phaedra, I'm really struggling bringing down this one big bad boss go through this one raid event. I want you to watch and provide real-time feedback to what I'm doing.
But how is that different from, like, in the realm of business anyway, like desktop sharing?
I mean, I don't think it's different. What I think it's doing is actually changing the dynamics and making it much more easy.
I see.
And it's doing it in such a way, when we start talking about kind of the intersection of the whole reason of this podcast, right, of taking gaming technology and bringing it to business or leveraging business in the context of gaming technology, this is now kind of that eye of the storm, at least this is how I see it, that says I can take, something that we've been doing in business forever, sharing my desktop, right? And the power and excitement of a gamed process realized through a very engaging gaming environment, I think we talked a while back on, using a first-person shooter engine to do business process modeling. And suddenly I have that one button click that says, I'm stuck here, or I want to show something to you. And I'm taking a standard business process, desktop sharing, a standard gaming environment, pulling those together and actually changing the way people communicate and interact with each other for an outward communication perspective and an inbound feedback perspective.
I think I see what you're saying. You're basically talking about accessibility.
Yes.
Because now it's like there's this major process. Okay, well, let me call tech support. Let me share my desktop with you, blah, blah, blah. Whereas with this approach, it's a much more natural integration.
Yeah, and there's a new generation of people that are going to come into the workforce who are going to have this experience of, when I need help, I press a single button,
right?
And you and I can communicate in real time. You and I can provide each other feedback, etc. I've changed the dynamic of how that process works.
Right.
And I'm leveraging you know, in 5 years is going to be a standard gaming technology and concept.
Well, tell me what you think of this, what the PS4 is saying regarding the sharing technology in the realm of gaming. So one of the questions I had was what your thoughts were regarding this sharing technology approach in the realm of gaming. When reading some of the blogs, I mean, a lot of gamers were saying, you know what, I'm not really interested in having these corporations gauge, you know, how I'm playing and what I'm sharing and what I'm interested in. You know, they brought up a lot of privacy concerns, but it made me ask the question, like, you know, they're already gauging what you're playing and what you're getting stuck on and at what point do you call for help. And, I mean, they already know this.
Yeah, I think those blog entries are naive at best, right? You point out, the makers of games that are distributed through some kind of shared experience – whether that's an MMO or a streaming service like Steam or some other way where the core interaction is between your machine and somewhere else controlled by the creator of that game, they're already doing all that. They're already tracking, you know, is the game too hard, right? Do we have quests out there that are unachievable or that are so easy that they're adversely impacting the economy? They're looking at the data in the aggregate. They're not worried that, you know, Mr. Giggles level 90 Death Knight is having trouble with a simple crafting quest. But if all the level 90s are having troubles with the simple crafting quest, it's probably set incorrectly. The part that I think that they are doing today is capturing video of their gameplay to showcase how cool they are or what they've done, and then posting that on some third-party service, be it YouTube or Vimeo or one of these other streaming video sites, for two things: feedback and communications, right?
Yeah.
And so the value prop is there. All that other stuff, it's already happening. That's my, you know, limited and unbiased opinion.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you. Because if I were a publisher, game publisher, I would want to know precisely what parts of the game people like and don't like and where they're getting stuck, so you can constantly be tweaking and thinking about the next rev. And you know, and as we move more towards the hosted game model where the game resides out on the cloud, making sure that the game gets better and better and better over time without having to shrink wrap another box is going to be – that's going to be king. That's the trend of where things are going.
Yeah, that I absolutely agree. Now, another interesting thing about the announcement, and I haven't been able to watch the whole announcement yet in the replays, but I've followed a couple of the blogs, I've watched some snippets and some commentary on it, is the whole fact that because they are changing their architecture over to x86-based, which of course is going to provide lots of more flexibility and expansion and capabilities. What do you do with all your old games, right? And when I think about this from a business perspective, and how often do you build a game and expect it to have a very, very long shelf life in a business environment versus, you know, I have this specific training need, or I have this specific process need, or I have this other specific need, I build a game and I'm assuming that it will have a life of, you know, 1 to 3 years, versus I'm building a, you know, an ERP system or a CRM system where my investment case is more on the 10 to 20 years perspective.
Agreed. One other announcement made by Sony was the iCamera 4. They were saying that it's going to be a lot more seamless of an integration of the player into the game world in terms of how they're depicted. So that could be cool.
Yeah, I was watching the video on that. There's a video that we'll put in the show notes that Michael found, which is definitely at least in the U.S. not safe for work.
Right.
Where the guy's talking through that. And, you know, the whole idea of, you know, the PS3 had the eye or whatever they called it, right? The Xbox 360 has the, I don't even know what they call it, but it's another eye-based way of providing input. And the thing that they were showing in the video was Rock Band. Using the eye and whatever. They used to have that stick with the glowing top on it.
Oh, yes. I saw
whatever
that
thing was called.
Yes.
And so, yeah, that's an interesting feature. I think what's more important about that, though, is, yeah, it'll be better. I have yet to see really good usage of that, and I'm sure it has to do with the fidelity that they have on the controls. You know, years ago we talked about, you know, the Minority Report interface, right?
Yep.
And I was doing some discussions and talking with a company called Emotive that used the Brain interface, and they had a great demo where they were showing kind of a Minority Report interface using brain waves, and then people said, oh no, that's way too complex, and you know, all you need is the ability to recognize your hands within space and context. And so now we have all these eye-based stuff that definitely seem to have some level of that capability. But the problem that I see is when you really look at the 360 version, the number of pixels, right? The fidelity of the resolution is not very high. So you're not going to have detailed facial expressions, but you might be able to look at, you know, I turn my whole head left and right.
Right.
And so maybe this magic PS4 eye update will have better facial recognition than what has happened in the past. When it gets down to the point where it can do things like track eye movement, which is
now
one of the
things. That would be cool.
Yeah, because, you know, one of the things that the brainwave sensors tend to have is they do have tracking of eye movement.
And that's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for some serious brainwave sensors. I saw actually this week there was an article that was being posted around regarding these temporary tattoos that actually sense brainwave patterns.
What?
Yes,
I need that link for the show notes.
I will send it to you so you can post it. But in essence, yeah, university was working on this, and the idea is that it's a temporary tattoo. So it's you stick it on, and it's got all these sensors, and in essence, they're saying it's going to be able to facilitate telekinesis. I am so there.
Oh, I'm there. I am there. So that would be an alliterative topic, right? The telekinesis tattoo?
Yes, the telekinesis tattoo. Most assuredly. It looks super cool. But as soon as I saw that newsfeed on this temporary tattoo that allows for telekinesis, I was thinking, man, can you imagine something like that integrated into a game?
Oh,
such
awesome.
That forget about having any stinking controller.
Forget about it.
You just use your brain waves to go and pick up that lightsaber. I mean, you could do some really cool stuff having that kind of integration.
Yeah. And that was kind of the promise of Emotive, and they're doing really cool things, right? You know, when I was at iWorld, they were doing things like controlling a AR drone using your mind, flying it around this big area, which was pretty awesome. The challenge is, and this all again, it gets back to the fidelity question, whether it's the fidelity of the pixels to be able to recognize eye movement, or the fidelities of thought. Right. And so in the Emotive case, the average person working really hard can probably get to the point of 6 unique thoughts that the headset could pick up. So
six unique
thoughts. So think about that from a game. It's like, pick up lightsaber, that's one. Swing left, that's two. Swing right, that's three. Run away, that's four. Game over. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm sure we've got a lot more more to spec out before.
Yeah,
it can
but it's awesome. The promise is there, and each time one of these tools come out, you know, each time one of these technologies come out, they're improving the algorithms, they're improving the fidelity, they're improving the capabilities. And it goes back to the work example in my virtual co-location article, which is, you know, if I can pick up and understand all the background noise that's going on at your office and isolate you out of that and then capture that data and then take that data and represent it in another office where, you know, Michael has been captured. Suddenly I have the two of you in the same room virtually. And all the fidelity that you have of eye movement, of hand movement, of voice inflection, all that stuff becomes pure data that can be used in improving the collaboration.
You know, I agree. And I think in the realm of defense, this could be very, very interesting as well. There's been a lot of talks about the silver tsunami and people just leaving in hordes, you know, as they're retiring. And how do you do knowledge capture? There could be something interesting there.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be cool. Now, so speaking of in defense, we probably should not talk about the Chinese hacker military hackers on the U.S. infrastructure.
Yeah.
I've been reading that article. I've been reading the PDF that the security company has actually done that says how they made that assessment. And it is scary awesome.
Post it. I want to see.
I'll add a link. On security. So the article was, I mean, the analysis is, right, they did all these different traces of all the different attack vectors. And, you know, if you're in security, the term attack vectors is really important, right? You got to use that term to sound like you know what you're talking about. And what they've done is they've been able to trace out of like 170-odd attacks, 80% or more, and I'm making up the numbers, but it's in that order of magnitude range, right? We're coming from a centralized set of IP addresses located within this one neighborhood in Shanghai. And in that neighborhood is the specific military intelligence offices group and pretty much nothing else. Nothing else that would have this level of computing power, computing need, and ability for these attack vectors. And so the net is, it's either them or they're completely incompetent because it's happening right where they're at. And so it's a fascinating article, and I'll put that PDF link in the show notes because it's one of these things that if you're into just technology in general, you're into security, you're in business, you have to read this. And I was like, well, it doesn't look like we're gonna get Michael back for the show. You know, it's one of these Fridays. What can I say? But man, have we had a lot of interesting things to think about. You know, one. The whole concept of stickiness in business games and the implications there, you know, of course, I mean, Phaedra, you gave the right answer, which is it depends, right?
It's always the right answer.
It's one of those few times when the consulting answer actually does depend.
Truly.
But, you know, I would like to hear from some of the people who are developing games, who listen to the show, you know, what are some of the use cases or ideas where certain stickiness factors come into play. Certain levers make more sense than others. And then maybe take that and see if you can manipulate those levers with telekinesis tattoos.
I like this plan. This works for me.
I mean, that is just the that is just so awesome, so cool. And as we talked about on the show, you know, I've been playing around with the headset, and the fact that you have to keep the sensors wet to keep the contact to the skin appropriate, yada, 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 all that stuff. And now you have something that the distance between the sensor and the skin is, oh, probably microns, because it's stuck to it.
Right. Exactly.
That is so
exactly.
Cool.
I think it holds a lot of promise. In fact, if I were a betting gal, that's where I would put my money in terms of what the next generation console device is going to look like.
Yeah. And so, these sensors
could be interesting.
They're not going to be expensive. I mean, they can't be, right? There's just not enough to them. The expensive part's going to be the software, which is always the case. And that's where the real power is going to come, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, we want your feedback. This has been an exciting show on so many levels, technically, communicationsly, cool things that we talked about. We want your feedback. Drop us a note. Send us Google+. We have a Google+ page on our Facebook page. Rate us in iTunes. That really, really helps us so that other people will find out about the show. So if you like the show, you're listening to the show, rate us on iTunes. Tell your friends about us on our Facebook page. You know, post a link in your stream and refer to our Facebook page and get people engaged that way. Follow us on Twitter. I'm MichaelRowe01. And Phaedra, you are?
Innovate Game.
That's INNOV, the number 8 game. And Michael Martin can be reached at Carolina Big Blue, or just follow our games@work_biz Twitter feed. We're trying to get that one a little bit more active. You know, we probably tweet much more. Looking forward to hearing from you for our next show, which is next week. So bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.